We're going to pick up the story today in Numbers chapter 21, verse number 13, where the Israelis have now finished their rounding the people of Edom, because the Edomites did not want them cutting through their territory on the king's highway. And because Edom is a brother nation with the Israelis, and they are sovereign over their territory, the Israelis have to respect that. That's what God expected from them. So in verse 13, they finished the roundabout detour, and it says that from there they set out and camped on the other side of the Arnon, which is in the wilderness that extends from the border of the Amorites. For the Arnon is the border of Moab, between Moab and the Amorites. And therefore, it is said in the book of the wars of he who is, Waheb in Shuphah, and the valleys of the Arnon, and the slopes of the valleys that extends to the seat of Ar, and leans to the border of Moab. This is basically a poetic way of just letting us know Moab had very specific boundaries. And the Israelis have to show respect to the Moabites as well, because they are a related group. Remember that the Moabites and the Ammonites are descendants of Lot, who was the nephew of Abraham. So these territories have been given to Edom, and to Moab, and to Ammon by God through Abraham and through the Abrahamic covenant. So the Israelis are not supposed to be taking any of this property or getting into any fights with these guys. They're supposed to treat them with respect. So Israel is on the main thoroughfare, called the King's Highway now. It's the trade route that is now going up on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. It's up in the plateau region, so it's several miles away from the shores of the Dead Sea. But eventually this road will go all the way up to Damascus. There's about 60 miles of this road that we're looking at from the southern border of Moab to the northern border of Moab that Israel is going to travel on. And then they're going to hang a hard left or head west and go down into the Jordan Valley across from Jericho. So they've only got a little less than 100 road miles left on their journey to the border that they're going to enter on with Canaan. And it should be easy going. That should be the plan. Moab does not reach out in an aggressive fashion toward them, even though we'll find out later Moab is concerned about them. But the explanation is more likely that Moab had recently been beaten by the Amorites coming from the north. And so Moab was not in any way, shape, or form ready to take on a military match with anyone. So they just leave the Israelis alone as they pass by. So let's read a couple of more of the notes for the trip on this this journey along the Moab portion of the highway. And it says in verse 16 of Numbers 21, from there they continued to Beer, which is in Hebrew the word for a well or a spring. That is the well of which he who is said to Moses, gather the people together so that I may give them water. So Beer, which is somewhere along this road east of the Dead Sea in Moabite territory, this is the miraculous watering hole that God provides. And apparently, the leadership is somehow involved with getting this water flowing, because there's a song that's written for this event. Verse 17, then Israel sang this song, spring up, O well, sing to it. The well which the nobles, or which the princes dug, that the nobles of the people delved with the scepter and with their staffs. So apparently the leaders of Israel gathered around this site and must have symbolically used their little symbols of office to kind of dig at the ground a little bit, and God makes this water come up out of the ground, and it becomes the water source for Israel to fill up all of their water containers. So it's a great song reminding them once again that God provides as the Israelites follow. From the wilderness, they went on to Matanah, and from Matanah to Nahaliel, and from Nahaliel to Bamat, and from Bamat to the valley lying in the region of Moab by the top of Pisgah that looks down on the desert. So they've now reached the northern border of Moab, and they've got another people group that have control of the next section that they have to travel through. And this people group would be the Amorites. And the Israelis are not related to the Amorites like they are to the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites. So they have to ask for special permission to make this last bit of the journey down into the Jordan Valley before they go into the Promised Land. Now, Amorites are among the groups that will be kicked out of Canaan when the Israelis cross the Jordan and go in there. But these Amorites are not in Canaan. They are on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So they're not inside the technical Promised Land of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So the Israelis had no directives from God at this point to evict any of these Amorites from the territory that they're in. It doesn't even matter that these Amorites have recently taken this section from the Moabites. That's between the Moabites and the Amorites. The Israelis just need to get through this narrow section of land so that they can get to the Promised Land and start that process of occupying it. But the king of the Amorites is not having any of that. He sees these guys as a threat. So Israel tries to make nice. Verse 21, Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into field or vineyard. We will not drink the water of a well. We will go by the king's highway until we pass through your territory. So same thing that they'd offered to the Edomites. We'll behave ourselves. We'll use our own supplies. And you won't even know where we've been here once we're gone. Verse 23, but Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his territory. He gathered all his people together and went out against Israel to the wilderness and came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. So he doesn't just simply threaten the Israelis like the Edomites did. He actually attacks them. And this is where the size of the Promised Land changes. Because if this guy had left the Israelis alone, then the Israelis would have only occupied the technical Promised Land on the western side of the Jordan River. But because these guys do attack Israel, Israel responds with God's assistance and by right of conquest, and that would be a self-defense conquest, by the way, God gives this land to the Israelis. And the land that we're talking about is actually what is modern-day Jordan. That's how it gets its name. It's on the eastern side of the Jordan Valley. So verse 24, Israel defeated him, that is Sihon, with the edge of the sword and took possession of his land from the Arnon, that's the border with Moab, to the Yabuk, which is a river that's about halfway up the Jordan Valley toward the Sea of Galilee. And that's the border between Sihon and his neighbors to the north in Bashan. So he defeats, that is Israel, defeats these Amorites in the entirety of their property. As far as the Ammonites, for the border, the Ammonites was strong. And Israel took all these cities, and Israel settled in all the cities of the Amorites in Heshbon and in all its villages. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab and had taken all his land that is in his hand as far as the Arnon. Therefore, the ballad singers say, come to Heshbon, let it be built. Let the city of Sihon be established. For fire came out from Heshbon, flame from the city of Sihon. It devoured Ar of Moab and swallowed the heights of Arnon. Woe to you, O Moab, you are undone, O people of Chemosh. Now the Moabites had a twisted remembrance of the God who destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. They called him Chemosh, which means destroyer. And it's a very bad relationship between the Moabites in their religion with this Chemosh. So you are undone, O people of Chemosh. He has made his sons fugitives and his daughters captive to the Amorite king Sihon. So we overthrew them. Heshbon as far as Dibon perished. We laid waste as far as Naphah. Fire spread as far as Medeba. And so this was a song, apparently contemporary with this time, where the Amorites of Sihon had taken some of the property of northern Moab. And now Israel has taken all of the property of Sihon for an annexation to the Promised Land. And so that's why Israel's boundaries from this time forward include territory on the eastern side of the Jordan River, north of Moab, and Moab's northern boundary now is right along the same area as the northern tip of the Dead Sea. And so thus, verse 31, Israel lived in the land of the Amorites. So Moses then sent out to spy out Jazer, and they captured its villages and dispossessed the Amorites who were there. So now that this property has been ceded into the hands of Israel, Moses needed to know, what are the boundaries? What does it look like? What are the things that we should consider now that we're supposed to take care of it? It's become part of our inheritance. Well, while Moses is doing all of that, the neighbor to the north of Sihon, the former Sihon, the now deceased Sihon, he realizes, oh my goodness, those guys wiped out Sihon in a short period of time. They're dangerous. I need to do something about them. And so the next neighbor north decides he's going to attack the Israelis as well. Verse 33. Then they turned and they went up by the way to Bashan. And Og, the king of Bashan, came out against them, he and his people, to battle at Edrei. But he who is said to Moses, don't fear him, for I have given him into your hand and all his people and his land, and you shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon. So they defeated him and his sons and all his people until he had no survivor left, and they possessed his land. And so now the Israelis have territory gained by defensive conquest. They've got land that goes all the way up to what we call Golan today, the Golan Heights area, east of the Sea of Galilee. And so this is why the promised land is not just simply everything west of the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, and the Sea of Galilee. It includes this annexed portion that junts out to the east side of the Jordan all the way up into the Golan Heights area. It's all because of this little incident here, these two incidents, where peoples that wouldn't leave Israel alone but attacked them ended up being defeated by God's supernatural assistance, and God said to Israel, you can have their land. Make it part of your promised land. Verse 1 of chapter 22. And this is a story that's going to take us a couple of days to tell. It says, then the people of Israel set out and camped in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan at Jericho. So if you look at a Bible map, or if you want to look at Google Earth, you find Jordan, the Jordan River, as it goes into the northern part of the Dead Sea. And up to the northwest of where the Jordan flows into the Dead Sea is the city of Jericho. And Jericho sits about, I don't remember, it's about 5 miles or so west of the Jordan River. And so the Israelis are camped a few miles east of the Jordan River across from Jericho. So when they set up their encampment in the plains of Moab, their presence of God, the tower of cloud that goes up and over their encampment, the people at Jericho, about 10 miles away, they could see that, especially at night when it's all lit up with the fire of God. So that's how close they are to Jericho now. But they're not yet ready to cross and go into the promised land. That has to wait until the 40th year is finished and the 41st year starts. Well, while they're waiting in the plains of Moab, the king of Moab, who has just seen the Israelis wipe the floor with Sihon and Og, and Sihon has just recently defeated Moab badly. So the king of Moab has every reason to be very much afraid of the Israelis if he were to try to attack them. And he probably has in his head, I want to retake my land. I want my property back. But he can't do it by taking the Israelis on head to head. He knows that. So he gets it in his mind, I need to defeat them first in the supernatural world. I need to break their power because they've got this being that's traveling with them that is keeping them protected. So I've got to break that. I've got to get them cursed. And so that's why we read in Numbers chapter 21, verse 2, Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. Moab was in great dread of the people because they were many. Moab was overcome with fear of the people of Israel. Moab said to the elders of Midian. Now, Midian, remember, is where Moses spent the last, the last 40 years of his life before he came to Egypt for the Exodus. Midian is a southern neighbor of Moab. It's off to the south and east of Moab proper. So Moab apparently has some sort of alliance agreement, some sort of relationship, maybe commerce, with the Midianites. So he reaches out to the Midianites for assistance. So he says to the elders of Midian, "This horde will now lick up all that's around us as the ox licks up the grass of the field." So his evaluation is, if we as an alliance here, if we don't do something, Israel's just going to conquer everybody around here, including us, and we'll be gone. So Balak, the son of Zippor, who was king of Midian at that time, sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Petor, which is near the river in the land of the people of Ammah, to call him. Now, the river here appears to be the Euphrates River. And up by the Euphrates River is where some of Abraham's other relatives live. And when Abraham separated from those relatives, there was some sort of connection among some of them, at least, with the one true God that they called God Most High. And you may remember that when Jacob went up there to look for a wife, he is actually in connection with relatives that still believe in God Most High. And I would submit to you that some sort of pocket of belief in that one true God remained in place up there near the Euphrates River. And so one prophet of this true God has got a reputation that when he makes prophecies, he speaks on behalf of God Most High, it comes to pass. And so King Balak hears about this, and he sends a delegation to bring this Balaam down to Moab to put a curse, a spiritual curse, upon the Israeli people, to break the power in the supernatural realm of these people. And so this is how his message is communicated by his messengers. Behold, a people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the earth. They're dwelling opposite me. Come now, curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them from the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. Now that is interesting, because we know that God said of Abraham, Abraham, those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. So we know that Abraham had this situation with the true and living God that sounds similar to what's being described here that Balaam has, that when he speaks on behalf of the God that he serves, if he speaks blessing, it happens. If he speaks curses, it happens. And so we have this twisted situation where King Balak is actually asking a prophet of the true and living God, he who is, to come down and put a curse upon the people who are living under the shadow of the visible presence of that exact same God. And so that's not going to turn out well. So verse 7, so the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian, this allied group, They departed with the fees for divination in their hand, and they came to Balaam, and they gave him Balak's message. And he said to them, lodge here tonight, and I'll bring back word to you as he who is speaks to me. Now, Moses, as he's writing these things down, he uses the name he knows God as, but he places it here in such a way to make it clear that that is the exact same God that Balaam is associated with, even though he probably doesn't use that term, because this is an Israeli term. So Balaam says, well, I need to go to talk to God Most High, and then I'll let you know in the morning what he tells me about this. So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. God came to Balaam and said, who are these men with you? Now, he, of course, already knows. He's wanting Balaam to talk about it. So Balaam said to God, Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me saying, behold, a people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the earth. Come, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to fight against them and drive them out. And so God said to Balaam, you shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. So this is where we see, beyond any shadow of a doubt, Balaam is actually working for the true and living God. And God tells him, no, they are my people. They are blessed, and you will not, under any circumstances, go down there and try to put a curse on them. So Balaam rose in the morning, and he said to the princes of Balak, go to your own land, for he who is has refused to let me go with you. So the princes of Moab rose, and they went to Balak and said, Balaam refuses to come with us. So the refusal is made, and it would have been great if the story could have ended there, but it doesn't. Because Balak figures that the problem is just money. And if you actually believe money is the answer to everything, then when you get refused, you just offer more money. And that's where we'll take up the story tomorrow when we get back into the Word.